Welcome again, everybody. We're recording now. This is our Search 2024 webinar. I'm Melissa Carvel-Zimmer. I'm the UUMA's Director of Ministries for Collegial Care and so happy to be hosting today and grateful to our colleagues and the UUA staff who are coming to share with us insights and observations, resources that will help you with your search this year, or for those of you who are here because you're curious, help you point other people to accurate information about resources and perspectives on search. The way we will proceed today, we'll have introductions of our colleagues on the UA staff. We'll have short presentations about this year's search cycle from a couple of those folks. And then the vast majority of our time will be responsive to your questions. So if you know already that you have a question, you're welcome to send it to me privately in the chat. As our host today, I'll be collecting the questions, noticing where there are overlaps, trying to get through as many as we can. If your question is such that it would really be easier for you to speak it than to write it, there'll be an opportunity to do that as well. And we'll try to be as inclusive as we can of all of you who are here and the many, many directions from which you hope to ask questions today. And so I will turn now to our colleagues. I will invite them to introduce themselves. First, Keith Cron, and then Patrice Curtis, Christine Purcell, and Jan Gartner. So Keith, turning to you.
Hi, hello everyone. Reverend Keith Cron, Director of the Transitions Office for the UUA. Now in my 14th year, coming to you from Providence, Rhode Island. My pronouns are he, him. I'm in a blue top with a blurred background.
Thanks, Keith. I can't see all the screens at once. Patrice, are you ready to introduce yourself? All right, let's go to Christine then.
Hi, folks. Christine Purcell, Transitions Program Manager of the UUA, work for the Congregational Life staff team, pronouns she, her, riot of reddish hair, green shirt, and chunky tortoiseshell glasses. Very glad to be with you. Jan.
Thanks, Christine. I'm Jan Gartner, she, her, coming to you from the Rochester, New York area. I am in a dark striped turtleneck and a black sweater. I have glasses and dark hair, and I even put earrings on for you today. And my work in the Office of Church Staff Finances, I describe it as transitions adjacent, and I work a lot with the transitions team, and I'm here largely to hear your wonderings.
Thank you. So again, I'll say for those just arriving that we'll have some brief presentations and then an opportunity to really spend significant time with your questions. So if you know you already have a question, you can send it to me. There'll also be an opportunity for you to be called upon later. And we will catch up with an introduction from Patrice later when they get here. We'll start with hearing from Keith and Christine, who are going to share with us some perspectives on this year's search.
Well, it's great to be with you all. And I'm going to let Christine talk about the perspectives from her work and that she does with congregations and search committees. I'm going to talk to you with what I know from working with ministers and watching the process evolve. We have a smaller number of congregations in the settled search than here. This is typical. I think, and Christine, feel free to disagree with me, but I think that's in large part because Christine had the good idea, which we have moved toward, that we recommend to any congregation of 125 members or less not go into a settled search, that they do a contract search simply so that they save not only money, but also leadership capacity as they go through the search process. It has changed already the characteristics of this year's settled search. We noticed that more congregations seem excited, ready, energized, and less concerned about things than we normally have. And we think that's because we're talking with congregations who have a little more stability and and are ready for a search in new ways. I also think there's more hope in the system. I've been in 12 congregations already this small. I just encounter more hope than I have seen in the last couple of years. Our folks are excited to be together and looking forward to what's ahead. I want to talk about a significant change in the search process, not so much a change, significant recommendation. For years, we've asked ministers to have their own search website as a part of the search process. We've discovered in our feedback from congregations and their search committees, what they really want are access to sermons. So we are discontinuing recommending a website for ministers as part of the search process, largely because so many of your sermons are already up. It seemed like a significant use of time and energy, and it's now optional. That's not to say that you can't have one. You just don't have to have one. And that's based on the feedback of congregational search committees. We will send names out for the settled search on January 2nd, even though it is a UUA holiday, and that we are off because we want to keep to our schedule. The search will proceed through the spring, winter and spring. Pre-candidating offers can be made as early as January 23rd. Ministers can accept them on January 24th. Pre-candidating weekends will be the first, all the month of February, and then the first four weekends of March. The last weekend of March is Easter. Offers could be extended on the Thursday before Easter, and we can get into some of the particulars around that with candidating week happening in sometime in April or May. Developmental ministry should be posted at the end of January, beginning at that time. They'll then be, however, be on the same deadline with making decisions again by the end of March. Contract ministries can open at any time. Interim ministries will start being posted on February 1st, and the search will begin that last Monday of April. I think that's what I want to say for now. And Christine, I'll let you jump right in.
Thanks, Keith. I'm glad you mentioned it's not quite a policy, but the strong recommendation we have this cycle that congregations with fewer than 125 members use the contract search process to find a minister. But then, of course, call is open to them through the contract to call process. Another reason we did this is because we observed that around 125 or slightly less, we're seeing less certainty about the sustainability of full-time ministry. And we didn't want it to be a setup for you or for folks who are going into the settled search, anticipating at least a four-year commitment from a congregation. So in addition to being, you know, more affordable, more accessible to volunteers, I think it's just kind of it's where we are right now. I'm not sure that number will move just as far as anticipating or generalizing about sustainability. We do have one congregation in settled search that did not reach that line for us. And it's because they went into search so long ago and they've been in a variety of transitional ministries since then, but the congregation anticipated settled search and they understand that they may receive fewer applicants. They just want to take their chances and see what might be possible for them in the settled search, but the rest are over that mark. I think due to that recommendation and also due to the congregational accountability and search policy that we've implemented, that the congregations in search this cycle feel really optimistic about. I mean, it's not to say that those congregations don't have their challenges, but I feel like they've been really clear about their challenges and their search profiles. So at least there's self-awareness. So, you know, interim ministers and regional staff review the congregational records of all congregations in settled search before they're published. And so there have been other eyes on those records before they go out and encouragement to be self-aware, to present a nuanced view, not to just say what's rosy, but to say what the work will be and what the challenges are ahead for them. We still anticipate that Davis, California will or may publish their search record this cycle. We're very hopeful. I'm working very closely with their search team, and I think they're pretty close. In case you noticed that it's still marked learn more and not view CR on the list of settled ministries, we are working with them, and I hope it will be posted soon. The most interesting trend I've seen this search cycle so far is congregations looking more closely than usual at inside candidates or pursuing contract to call options. I mean, the time for considering inside candidates is over for the settled search cycle, and all of the settled ministry opportunities that are on our jobs board are open to external applicants and have no inside candidates still in consideration. But I think it's worth mentioning today because the pandemic and what congregational leaders think of as a minister shortage, I think that's led to greater appreciation of ministers in general and valuing the partnerships that congregations and ministers already have. I hope that such appreciation carries over into your next ministry partnership if you're in search. I'd like to say a little bit about how to get more information and what's published in the search profiles about congregations. You'll see the contact information for primary contacts on the UUA regional staff as a part of each search profile. We usually ask that applicants wait until they have an interview scheduled before they reach out to regional staff, if not until the pre-candidate phase of search. But if you are new to parish ministry, if this would be your first parish ministry while you're in search, or if you hold an identity which is historically marginalized or can be marginalized in UU spaces, please feel free to reach out before you apply or during the application process whenever you want, basically. If there's anything regional staff can share with you to help you make decisions which will be good for you and for your ministry career, they'll be glad to share what they know. I'm trying to think what else. Oh, I remember. I've heard some concerns about the length of candidating week. I keep thinking I need to say this, and I wasn't sure I'd remember. I wanted you to know that while we suggest some ways that candidating week can be structured, we don't set rules about this time period. There are some matches, ministry matches, for which a shorter candidating week could work. And there are some in which the full 9 days would really be needed to build trust and relationship for an acceptable call vote. Whatever is mutually agreeable is fine here. Feel free to check in with Keith or me or Patrice even if you want to bounce some ideas. But I have been talking with search teams about this because sometimes they ask too, is, are we required to do X, Y, Z in the candidating window? And no, you're not really. So whatever's mutually decided there would probably be just fine. If you decide to do something different with your candidating week, please know, let us know how it goes. We're always open to learning and sharing new information. If we hear, you know, some folks try something and it goes well for folks, we'd be glad to share that in future resources. As Keith mentioned about developmental ministries, we will publish those on 31 January. We have three open right now, Allen Avenue in Portland, Maine, and Baltimore and Adelphi, Maryland have initiated those. I anticipate 3 to 4 more. I'm talking with a few boards about the possibility. So those will be open here at some point in the next, probably before the holiday break, but if not early in January. So these positions will be full-time at midpoint or better compensation, and we'll have annually renewable contracts for several years. Those are generally best for ministers with some experience because their congregation's doing pretty significant cultural or structural change work. I want to mention too the contract searches that are open. As of tomorrow afternoon, the list of open contract searches will be accurate. We've had a record number of contract searches just not fill in the last couple of years. And so we don't always hear from search teams, even when we ask. We're like, hi, how's it going? Sometimes they fill with non-UU ministers and we only hear about it when they tell us. So we have been reaching out and trying to get that information, but I finally set a deadline. We set as a team a deadline of December 15th to let us know if we should update it to 2024 or archive it. So I look forward to you being able to see an accurate list. We are working with our in-house developer on an auto archive feature, which will close listings which are not renewed, hopefully in the coming year to improve our system for you, for ministers in search. And that's what I can think to share about the search cycle. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, Christine. For the benefit of the recording, I'll share that there have already been some questions about what exactly happens in which months in February, March, and an acknowledgement that the schedule is posted online at uu.org/transitions. If you have questions, now is the time to send them to me in the chat. You can send them to me privately and I'll try to collate them so we can get through as many as possible. there are some already to everybody. So let's start with these in the chat now. Let's start with contract ministry. There was a question again in the chat about dates, and you've already addressed that, Christine. So as of tomorrow, that those dates will be current. There is a question about the length of time expected with a contract ministry. Who would like to address that?
Well, I'll jump in, Christine. Feel free to add in. Most contracts, most of the agreements specify year for a year. Occasionally, sometime a congregation will do more, sometimes they'll want to do less. But our general recommended understanding is that you're doing this for 12 months.
Thank you. We have a question about part-time, remote-only transitional ministry opportunities that are less than half-time. That's quite specific. So perhaps you can address that in its specificity, but also speak more generally about what you're anticipating regarding part-time remote ministry opportunities in the year ahead.
Well, let me give you everything that I've heard so far. Lots of ministers are interested in doing remote ministry. I have yet to meet a congregation who, for that, is what they want. We are really seeing a move toward wanting to be back together, wanting to be in person, wanting to see each other. Some congregations are willing to look at the possibility of someone being with them for some of the time and being remote some other time, but even some of that has been grudging. And virtual ministry almost comes up to a congregation as a last resort, which in some ways is a shame, because there are many ministers who said to me, I think I've gotten like 25 requests from colleagues kind of going, I'm more than welcome, open to doing a remote ministry of some kind of virtual ministry. And I feel like that is sort of the refrain I come back to with our congregations are not at the place in the moment where they're open to that yet. There is a lot of nervousness about who is actually still in the congregation. They want to see each other. They want the human connection. It will be interesting to see if this evolves down the road into something else. That's my opinion of where we are now. Christine, do you have anything you want to add?
Well, I hear the same thing, Keith. I mean, if you look at the number, it's a number I don't even like to think about sometimes, of congregations that were not able to fill their contract, mostly part-time ministry positions. You know, we do give them the ability to indicate as part of their search profile in a way that would show up on the jobs board, whether they are open to either a hybrid approach where the minister is there some of the time, but most of the time just sort of zooms in, or a fully virtual option. So we talk with them about this, but I'm not seeing anyone choose that as a first option. And I'm also seeing like, well, if that's what we can do, maybe, but I am seeing more congregations choose to be lay led or to contract for pieces of the ministry with someone local, just to kind of help them out with either whatever's most pressing for them, be that pastoral care or support with worship.
Can I just add very briefly that there are distinctions between whether you are traveling, if you're someone who's working in one state and serving in another, there are tax implications, and there are distinctions between if you are traveling to another site or whether you are commuting to another site, which is very nuanced. We are not experts, but we can help you and point you in the direction of people who know more than we do. So if you do get into one of those remote kinds of things where you're going to be traveling, or even if you're not, please check in with the Office of Church Staff Finances.
Thank you. A technical question. How many pre-candidating offers is someone permitted to accept?
Three.
Right. We have a few different questions regarding the move to not requiring a website, which are being appreciated. Specific questions are, do you have any recommendations about how many sermons to share? And also, in what form? Is this just the text, or does it need to be an audio or video recording? And how do you recommend that people curate the list of sermons that they're sharing?
Sure. Congregations, search committees prefer videos. They'll settle for audio, and only as a last resort will they read them. So just understand that as part of the search process. You can generally count on, I think it's good for a minister to have recommended sermons they recommend they look at first, so they get you get that first impression. You can also count on at least one person on the search committee finding everything you've done online. And it's probably good to Google yourself before you go into the search so that you know what's going to be there. But there is absolutely nothing wrong with pointing people in the right direction and leading with what you've got and giving it a place to go. You know, what I've seen over the years with search committees, you have a search committee of seven, five people will go in and view one sermon. One of those five people, a couple of those people will look at more than one sermon. One person will find everything that you've done. Usually the retiree who is one of the retirees on the search committee who has the time to do that. And that's sort of the reality. Some people are creating sheets with links that they can put in. If you do that as a Google Doc, just make sure it's not something that they can see who else has been given access to the sheet, because then they'll know who their competition is, and it messes up the confidentiality of the search process, which we really try and maintain. And other folks have embedded links or put links into their record sheet, which can be copy and pasted. It's really up to you to figure out a way that works. You know, in some cases, you know, once you receive acknowledgement from the search committee that they have your record sheet, then you could send them a sheet with the links. That would be fine as well.
And do you recommend the full worship service or just the sermon taken out?
I recommend doing what is ever is easiest for you and letting the search committee decide. In some ways, it's just easy to put up a link to the entire worship service. If you have the sermon, or if you're newer to ministry and you don't have a lot of sermons online, you can actually record a sermon, which you could share via online. And that will be appreciated. You know, I remember when we started this, I was so worried about the quality of videos and people being judged by the quality of it. Now I have literally no concerns about that, because we've all watched the bad, grainy YouTube videos that have been done. And there is less judgment about, you know, something seeming unprofessional, because And congregations' video recordings vary all over the map.
Thank you. I have some questions that are kind of, I want to present them as a companion. So one is about the ministerial record sheet. And someone noted that Christine shared that congregational record sheets are reviewed. So the question is, are ministerial record sheets, is anybody available to review ministerial record sheets? So that's question number one. And the companion question that I will put with that is related to financial contracts. And this isn't the question that was asked, but about reviewing financial contracts. And I want to speak to that latter one.
Good. Thank you.
First, and then I will review the ministerial contracts. So we do have a new Good Offices team in the UMA called the Good Offices Contract Call Negotiation Support Team. And we've been in existence, this team, for almost a year. And one of the things that the team members offer is the opportunity to look over your contract or letter of call and to support you in your negotiation process. So that can include a variety of services, from helping you think about what questions you have, understanding the agreement, noticing red or yellow flags, and even preparing sort of your strategy about how you'll go into the negotiation. I'm working on a sort of an intake sheet, because we've had so many requests for this service and just since February that I'm realizing we need to organize how we go about it a little bit more systematically. So you'll see that in the new year, how you can request an intake to have your contract or letter of call reviewed. And I suspect you might have something to say about that as well, Jan.
Can you say just the end of what you asked?
Yes,
about?
For complicated cases with letters of call and contracts, what services can people look to from the offices of church staff finance?
Sure, I support ministers directly and through their good officers often in kind of what's legal, what's recommended, what What have we seen in similar situations? And this includes complicated beginnings and endings and sometimes middles.
Thanks. I'll come back to the ministerial record sheet in a second, because while you're speaking, Jan, I want to invite you to address another question related to recommendations on financial contracts for part-time. Someone is noting that they've seen widely varying offers. What can you share about recommendations for part-time ministry?
Part-time ministries are so much more customized than full-time. You know, we have this bucket of things that we expect a full-time minister to do. And, you know, a smaller bucket, ideally, it doesn't just mean proportionally less of all of those things. It's usually much more, you know, individualized to what the congregation is prioritizing, what the minister is good at. So even things like how many preaching Sundays there are, if it's a half-time ministry, it might be half, might be more, might be less, depending on what else the congregation needs and what seems reasonable. So in terms of pay, usually we would expect it to be roughly proportional. We have, there are two situations that make it not roughly proportional. So say half-time. One is somebody, you know, is in a situation where they're a second wage earner, you know, they're taking part-time work because they can. And so they're not as concerned about negotiating everything that they can get. And they're like, yeah, that's fine. But also sometimes to make it worth it, you need to actually pay them more. And when we did a compensation survey about a year and a half ago, we found out, you know, writ large, part-time positions seem to be paying a little bit proportionally more than full-time. So, you know, for a quarter or half-time position, a little bit better than just that proportional amount of a full-time salary. And then benefits are tricky. Time off can be tricky. And I love working with people on those kind of what makes sense for this situation kind of arrangements.
Thanks, Jan. And now coming back to where I started, any thoughts on how people can get support for having their ministerial record reviewed?
Yeah, sure. In the settlement handbook, which is also at UUA.org transitions, we talk about asking trusted colleagues to look over your record sheet for you. And it's fairly easy to do. You can go in and print your MR as a PDF and then share it with whoever you want. And we do that just simply because we just don't have the capacity to really look at people's record sheets in the same way. I do have some general advice about it, which I'll just jump in and lean into, which is things that really matter. It really helps to remember the question that every search committee member is starting with is, could this person be our minister? And using that as one of the guides as you go through and look at the questions is really helpful. Other things that we say is search committee members will remember stories, and they'll remember the first story you tell. So lead off with a story that really embodies showing yourself off as a minister. That really helps. Not all the length of answers have to be uniform. Some can be longer, some can be shorter. I think you have to balance between wanting to present yourself in good and positive ways and remembering that seven search committee members, if it's a settled search, are going to be reading probably 10 to 15 ministerial record sheets. And at a certain point, their eyes will blur. So having a good mix of long and short probably is the way to go. And you can always, under anything, any question, always add the phrase, feel free to engage me more if you want more information about any of this, particularly if it's something where it's like, as opposed to trying to explain every little detail.
Great, thanks. This next question, I'm going to invite the question asker to elaborate if your responses don't cover particularly what they're curious about. The question is, since there's currently no ministerial credentialing director, how would you recommend candidates who are seeing the MFC in April prepare to engage with the contract interim search process?
Well, one, we hope we have a credentialing director by April, because I was heard from one member of the hiring team yesterday, actually. We'll see what happens. We do have two people in 1.5 positions working administratively on credentialing, Marion Bell and Mary Krigbaum. We decided yesterday that I am the weeds person. When they have weeds questions about what to do, they can reach out to me around all of this. This fall, we have operated reasonably well in the absence of a credentialing director in terms of helping people move forward. Things in general, if you know you're going to see the MFC in April and you have the time and the capacity and you're in candidate status, of course, you have to be. You can go ahead and start working on your ministerial record sheet. You can have access into the system. By the time you see the MFC, once you're done, as soon as you get notification that you're cleared for search, you can reach out to our office. You can look at the contract ministries. We'll probably have a few of the settled searches continuing in search. We'll be gearing up for the interim search, and you're free to reach out and ask any questions you have.
Great, thank you. We do have a question about the interim search, so that seems like a good move to me. How much information do congregations need? And could you talk more about the interim search process, some of the particulars, like how many names are given, how a minister expresses interest, and if you would also, anything that you might have in mind about how this year's interim cycle might unfold?
Yeah, I'm going to bore you with a little history first. So, you know, it used to be that all settled searches and interim searches were controlled by the transitions director. They decided whose name went where. When my predecessor, John Weston, came into the position, he created a free market system for the settled search process so that any minister who was cleared for search could apply for any congregation they went to. And because there was a history in some of the settled searches where it was clear, I even heard these conversations when I started the UUA, so-and-so needs to go be the minister at this particular congregation. That dates back 30 years ago now, but that's kind of one place where we were. So the settled search became a free market system. When I came into the position, that was not true for interim ministry. When I came into the position in 2010, I didn't want the responsibility or the power and the ability to use that for the interim search. So we decided we would send up to 8 names to a congregation. If more than 8 people applied to a congregation, we would go based on seniority of whether they were accredited interim minister in the program and how many years experience would determine if there was. That's happened like 3 times over the years. We've had more than 8 people apply to a particular congregation. Last year, we reduced the number to 6 because congregations said it was overwhelming to try and look at 8 people at more than once. And it also helped distribute ministers out more in terms of the process. It is a very short process. We ask for congregations to have their interim application done by mid to late April. Then we have the transitional ministry chapter, which if you're a member, you can come to the session where Christine and I go over the opportunities for ministry. And then you have to apply by Sunday. And you can put your name in for up to 15 different congregations. And I will send your name out to up to 6, depending on how you rank order them. You can't rank order them in the system. I ask for a rank order and we go from there. It gets complicated. I explain it in greater detail, but there at least it's much more free market with a nod toward interim experience and experience.
Thank you. One more question, and I'll say in a moment, if you have the kind of question that's best asked by voice, I'll invite people to raise their Zoom hand and call on you. One more question for now, though, is about the assistant ministry position that's posted and wondering whether there's anything different required about the application process for assistant ministry position.
These are posted in the contract ministry areas. We will have 2 now. Another one's coming that we know of. So far, and because it's in the contract position, they can open up their search at any time and close it at any time. A lot for full-time assistant ministry positions, they often mirror the settled search process because we tell them you have people who will be looking at you as well as settled ministry positions. So people may not be ready to, ministers may not be ready to make a decision until they've looked at all of their offers. For the most part, congregations actually do that once we tell them that. Not everyone, but most of them do. Otherwise, they can decide whether or not they want to have pre-candidating weekends or not. The other reality is a congregation can decide to do pre-candidating weekends virtually in the settled search process. We have a couple of congregations who are making these decisions based on their values and not wanting to fly people all over the continent as a way to look at their responsibility around climate matters. But the assistant ministry process, we generally recommend for the full times that they mirror what happens in the settled, and they do that depending on what makes sense for them.
Thank you. Let me turn now to ask if there's anybody who would like to ask their question by voice. Can you raise your Zoom hand feature if that includes you? We'll start with Samara and then Krista.
Thank you. This question actually just occurred to me, so I don't know that it's better by voice, but I would love to know if you can respond to whether or not how the transitions office or the credentialing office are going to address those of us who are going into search for him moving as more of a challenge, like people with children and things like that.
Well, this is becoming a more and more significant issue. We try and educate the congregations that this is an issue. Often they live with the idea that people are going to flock to them regardless of the realities, whether it be because of a spouse's job or family commitments or whatever it is. We also simply can't create openings in some areas. And you know, I still remember talking with a Lutheran pastor some years ago who said that one of the issues that we faced was that our size really limited how our search was going to go. And she was telling me, for example, that they had as many congregations in southeastern Pennsylvania as we did in the United States and Canada. And that really affects the openings where people can go. It affects intra-ministry in so many different ways. We also recommend to people who are limited geographically that occasionally a congregation gets turned off when someone says, I'm only looking at you because you're close. So be wary of that. They want to know who you are as a minister and not that you're specifically listed to them. On the other hand, I've also seen in some places, particularly here in New England, congregations only looking at people who are close by as a way to save money. And I think all those things are real.
Thank you. Krista.
I'm amused that somebody else is asking the family question because I'm like hanging out right now with this guy contemplating that. But my question is actually a technical one. And that is, when we submit our packets, not that it's a big deal, but I'm just curious, do our ministerial records get submitted in the state that they are when we say submit them? Or do they get access to our live ministerial records? So let's say, like, I know I'm going to submit to somebody, but I'm still tweaking one of the questions. By the time it's open to them, will it have all of the tweaks, or should I wait until I finish those tweaks? Does that make sense?
Yeah, you can. We released ministerial records on January 2nd for the settled search. You do not have to be finished with it to submit, but we've also had places where people have started on their record sheet, clearly didn't finish it. The record, the system does show us that a minister's record isn't finished, so we'll often reach back out to you. But you should have all changes finalized before it's ready to go for release. Know that on a contract ministry, we release the names on a daily basis. The administrator to transitions office, Amy Zen, checks daily who has submitted their names, confirms with me that a position is open and that the minister's name is eligible to go to a particular place. Once I confirm that, she sends it out. So that is just something to be aware of.
While you're speaking about that, we do have a question just asking for more understanding about how the contract search differs from the regular search, how part-time and interim ministries compare and contrast. So again, because it's a lot to absorb, especially when folks are new, could you compare and contrast the search processes?
Sure. I also saw Julie's question in the chat. Whenever they log in, they will get to see Julie Stoneberg asked in the chat, do people get a locked record of your profile once they open it? If you go back in and make changes and they log in again, they will see an updated change. They may wonder why you've updated it at some point, or you may have people with different record sheets on a search committee wondering why their version is different from yours. So that's something to be aware of. And it may cast some aspersions. Christine, do you want to talk about some of the differences in search for a minute? Because I have just been talking and talking and talking.
Well, I mean, I think you've covered kind of the contract search is just open all the time. We don't have any real rails or deadlines on it. Contract search teams are aware, though, of how the settled search particularly pulls on their process. We do tell them to try to post their listing if they know they have a position coming open on August 1st of the coming year, to publish it in December for the most exposure, basically, because ministers start looking in December. But they stay open until they fill or forever. Yeah, not anymore. But if you look at the ones from 2022 that are still open. So yeah, I mean, contract search teams are also aware not just of the calendar, how the calendar of the settled search pulls on the process, but that applicants may need to wait until a certain time to be able to say yes to a contract offer, because it can be extended at any time. We don't have an offer date for the contract search. So search teams are aware that they may hear from an applicant to whom they offer the position, I need to wait until I see what happens in the settled search. It's actually a good idea and responsible, especially if you're a pre-candidate, to just kind of see how that pans out for you. So they wouldn't be surprised to hear that. The question's kind of general. I'm not really sure what folks are looking for.
Well, Christine, let me just add the part-time searches. You may have only two or three people on a part-time search committee. They may seem slow, even glacial, to respond to applicants. And in large part because often they're doing two or three other things in the church as well. And so their time gets busy, or, you know, we've even seen one person sort of really try and who's responsible for the entire part-time search system. That's something to be a little bit wary of. On the other hand, you might know who the power broker is in that particular congregation if it's just one person who's making it all happen. If it's a full-time search, chances are you've got a good committee or a full committee working on it who will have some sense. You know, someone asked, should we get in our names to contract searches sooner rather than later? The answer is probably, though, if you're really looking at part-time searches, it's probably going to take a while, and I'd rather you do your record well. I mean, I would really, if they're looking at a start date of a particular time and it's past, ask. You're even free to ask us at transitions@uua.org. Do you know if a particular congregation is still open to receiving names? That's a perfectly fine thing to ask as you go through the process.
Thank you. We have 12 minutes left. I'm going to ask two sets of technical questions and a meta question, and then we'll see if we have time for any more. So if you've been forming your question, this is kind of the last call for questions. So the first of two technical questions, I'll just read this one. Could you clarify if we're supposed to send a list of the congregations we're applying to the transitions office, or are we supposed to release our records directly to the congregations, and when? What if our record is ready before January 2nd?
Right. The way that the system works, for the settled search, you do not need to let us know which congregations you've applied to. We'll see that in the system. You have a limit of up to 15 congregations in the settled search process that you can submit your name to. So if you submit your name for more than 15, I will circle back and say, which of these congregations should I not submit your name to? And because we release names through the system, you can express interest, but we're the one who are the ones who actually releases the names in the office. Myself, Christine, Amy Zen, the administrator, the ones who do the actual release. So just because your name is submitted doesn't mean that the congregation has it. In fact, you'll get an email from the system alerting you that your name has been sent to a congregation. And so does every search committee when they get a new record sheet. So, and this is because sometimes we have, like for students looking at contract ministries, they have a waiting period before, while fellowship ministers can apply. Occasionally we have someone who's on some sort of hold, or someone who goes on hold whose name we can't release.
So it's only for the interim search that folks will send a list, right, like your ranking. The others' contracts are released daily as they come in, and for developmental or settled, they're released on a particular day that's identified in our calendar.
That's really helpful. Thanks for covering that. More technical questions. Can the congregations click and see whoever they want, or if the minister only wants to be seen by some congregations, is it possible to hide ourselves to congregations looking?
Your name only gets sent where you apply.
Thank you. Meta question. Knowing that you don't have any crystal balls, this is for all of you, Christine and Keith, Jan, and Patrice, if Patrice made it. What trends might you be anticipating in all of the search processes this year, especially with regard to the dynamics that we've seen in recent years about the numbers of people applying, the positions left open, et cetera?
I have a couple of thoughts. One of the things that I am very aware is that congregations often are in their own bubble. And so they often don't see themselves as part of something larger. I talk with congregations, and because Christine, Jan, and I, and Patrice have sort of a larger picture, we often say things to them that are a surprise, because they think that they are the only congregation going through something. And to talk to them about various things, for example, one of the things I've said this fall is that everyone is exhausted. The world is exhausted. It's a little angry. In some cases, more than a little angry. We asked ministers to do more during the pandemic without getting paid for it. And often when a congregation didn't have the capacity to do something, well, they just asked their minister to do it. And that has created some of what's going on. I'm intrigued by how many heads sort of perk up when I say this, because it was like, it's not a thought that had occurred to them, so many people in a congregation before. And so, in the settled search, we have congregations who forget that a minister is looking at three or four different places. And that's just something to be aware of. They are very congregation focused, whereas you're going to have a bit of a larger picture, but there are ways that you can be focused too. I think it's really important just to remember the grand scope of things. I think it's really important that our congregations, it was interesting, and Christine and Jan, feel free to, our congregations were panicked for the most part during the pandemic. Do we have enough people? How are we going to raise money? How do we do church? And now that people are regathering, I'm just seeing more hope in our system than I have ever seen before. There is just more of, we get to be back together. There is a mix between an understanding of, can things go back to the way they were, to an open but more often grudging realization that they aren't. And congregations see some of the benefits of this, like doing the hybrid worship experience and making things available by Zoom. Congregational leaders are realizing there are always people who are going to only be on Zoom for what they're going to do. Our congregations are slightly less fussed, I'll use that word, about identity issues than they were before the pandemic. I mean, there were, I only had one congregation, for example, really in my work with the congregations this fall, really talk about having people upset about pronouns. That was not true 3 years ago. There's still congregations who see ministers with particular identity as a prize as opposed to a minister, or a minister plus a prize. That can get in the way, particularly around BIPOC folks. And yet they are aware they are, and part of that's awareness, they need to do something different. And they often see the minister as the place to do that for them. I've been cautioning congregations not to think of a minister as someone who does things for you, but someone who you partner with. This is actually Christine's phrase that she has used for years as a way to help them understand the responsibility that they themselves have as a part of the search. I also see that both ways. One of the ways I see ministers in trouble is that there is a difference between telling a congregation what to do and giving the congregations, here are my recommendations, it's your decision to make. And that's something I want to say. Christine, do you have anything you want to add to that?
More of the same, yeah. but one thing that's been really interesting to me in the last couple of weeks, because I'm meeting with every single search team to prepare them for the discernment phase of search. We're kind of chunking it down into, you know, here's what you do until, you know, end of November. And then there's kind of a natural rest point and pivot point in the search where I like to check in with them. I'm not hearing from search teams about how to privilege themselves in the search. I usually have gotten questions about, like, how can we get the best one, whatever that means. Let's unpack that for a second, folks. I'm hearing more about, I mean, they want to not just seem, but be excellent places to practice ministry. I'm hearing from search teams that learned something during either the Beyond Categorical Thinking or the B4 workshop that they're taking back to their board to go, we need to look at this. I'm seeing a little bit more connection to other UU congregations. And I think I think there are a lot of complicated reasons for that. But I'm, again, like I said at the beginning, just really more optimistic in general. I mean, I'm seeing expectations that are not, you know, 17 item lists long. It's like 3 or 4. I just feel like it's a little bit more reasonable. And I feel a little bit more hopeful about, I mean, in general, there are still, you know, outlying cases, but hopeful in general about the sustainability of ministry in these congregations, not just from a financial standpoint, but from like the spiritual drain standpoint. I think there are some better chances out there this cycle than there have been in other cycles.
I'd add a couple of things to that. One is, I think this fall, what I heard, and I'm sure Keith did also, that some congregations are stressing over whether anyone loves them or want to come where they are. And so I guess I would just say, as you are meeting with them, know that that's probably alive, depending on where the congregation is. If it's in a sort of a city that's sort of, I don't want to say in the middle of nowhere, but not a big city, they may be having that go on as well. So you might sense some overeagerness, or, you know, just that sense of, we hope you like us, which of course is alive anyway. But you get to be pastoral also, sort of, in your meeting with them, which I think is helpful. And then there's also the other thing that I noticed is that there's concern over doing things right, particularly around marginalized identities, how much work they've done or not done around widening the circle of concern and that sort of thing. And, you know, so again, being gentle and, you know, just sort of seeing where they really are as opposed to where they might be trying to say they are but aren't fully, but also being gentle around that. So yeah, I just wanted to add those couple of things. Oh, and I also would affirm very much what Keith said, is that if you hold a marginalized identity, to just be aware of that, doing it right. Well, if we get a minister with marginalized identity, then we've done something something right. All coming from a good place, just not necessarily, just not what we would hope for.
Thanks, Patrice. I'm really glad we got to hear from you. Thank you. And Jan, I think you get the last, if you have anything you wish to say on this question, the last word before we end for today.
Thank you. Just, it's been great to be with all of you. And I'm going to leave it at that and just invite people to reach out whenever I can be helpful. It was great to be together.
Great. Thank you so much, Jan, Patrice, Christine, Keith. We really appreciate your work on our collective behalf and on behalf of Unitarian Universalism. And thank you all for coming today, for bringing your questions. I hope it goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway. This isn't the last moment. So if you have more things to ask, I'm sure that you can reach out to anyone who spoke today. And likewise, the UUMA is here for you as well. Good to be with you all.